Welcome everyone to The Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at The Score. Appreciate you downloading and listening to the show today. I'm back off the injured list here. I got sick late last week. Had to cancel a bunch of content that I had planned, including a couple podcasts, but I'm trying to reschedule with those guests, so hopefully we can still have them on in the next few weeks or at least the next month at some point. And I'm still not 100%, but I'm definitely good enough to get back on track here. And today I want to go over the offseason risers and fallers for each team. We're going to break this down into two episodes. So today I'm going to talk about the offseason risers and fallers for the AFC. On Wednesday, we will do the NFC squads. And for this, it's the entire offseason. It's not just coming off the draft. We're factoring in free agency, coaching changes, legal issues, beat writer reports. Everything is going into consideration. So let's get to it here. And we will start with the Baltimore Ravens, who were just announced as the Chiefs opponent for the season opener in September. And we're going to have the entire NFL schedule released on Wednesday night. So I will have some posts and a podcast on that later in the week. But for now, it's the Ravens risers this offseason. And that begins with a new Raven, Derrick Henry. I'm not sure that there was another landing spot that would have made me as excited for Henry's fantasy outlook as Baltimore does, because we knew that he was leaving Tennessee. He just turned 30 in January. We've been worried about that age-related decline the last couple years. It's still a concern, but this is one of the teams that they want to run the ball. They've been able to do it well, even though they haven't really had a back in recent years that they can rely on, because J.K. Dobbins, he's had his injury issues, but defenses are out there trying to account for Lamar Jackson. That makes life on the running backs a little easier. And you just have to look at last year's results, right? Gus Edwards, who is a solid backup, but not really a guy that you necessarily want as your full-time starter. And we'll get into that a little more when we talk about the Chargers in a bit. But last year in Baltimore, Gus Edwards had 980 yards from scrimmage and 13 touchdowns. Now, Henry, if he can stay healthy, his ceiling is much higher than that, and his floor is still very strong due to that touchdown potential. So Henry has a shot to keep his fantasy production going in Baltimore. The faller here is his teammate Keaton Mitchell. And Mitchell, if he were healthy, I would say that yes, he could have had a decent value behind Henry, a speedy change of pace guy, that kind of home run option in Baltimore's backfield. But he's coming off a full ACL tear in December. And as a guy that's reliant on that game-breaking speed, that really worries me. And I know ACL injuries, they're not as scary as they used to be, but we've seen plenty of backs struggle the next season. And now with Henry there, and even with Rasheen Ali, the rookie, the Ravens' fifth round pick, possibly getting involved, Mitchell isn't somebody that I'm targeting anymore. On to my Bills next. And with Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis leaving, it was pretty clear that the riser was going to come from somebody in this passing attack. And some of it's going to depend on how fast their first rounder, Keon Coleman, is going to get comfortable in the pros and how quickly he can make his mark. He's a slight riser based on the landing spot for sure. But I'm giving this one to Dalton Kincaid and Curtis Samuel, because when Kincaid was drafted last year, there was talk that maybe he would eventually emerge as Josh Allen's Travis Kelce. Now he's going to have a chance to do that. And there's a realistic possibility that Kincaid could be the number one target in this offense in 2024. And that gives him tight end one overall upside. Right now, he's the tight end five in my rankings. And then Curtis Samuel, he's a bit of a longer shot for fantasy, but he's going to have a legit role in Buffalo. And I've mentioned the connection with Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady before. Samuel's best season came with Brady back with the Panthers in 2020. He had over 1,000 scrimmage yards. He had 5 touchdowns. So he's a nice value right now, thanks to this situation. And he's back in the fantasy radar as a wide receiver 4 flex option with the potential for more if Coleman gets off to a slow start. Now, the faller in Buffalo, I'm going to say James Cook. I don't think it's a huge fall for him, though, because we saw Latavius Murray and others get touches last year, and Cook still had a great season, especially once Brady took over as OC. He was a low-end RB1 from that point on, and we're going off fantasy points per game as usual there. But the Bills, they did bring in another power back to replace Murray, 4th-rounder Ray Davis. And like I said, that doesn't crush Cook's value. Davis, he's not really coming in for his job. He's a day 3 pick. He's more of a complimentary piece. But his presence, along with Josh Allen vulturing some work in the running game, it's going to make it tough for Cook to really explode or hit another level for fantasy. So he dropped a couple spots into that high-end RB2 range in my rankings. We'll keep moving on here to the Bengals, and I see one clear riser in this offense, and that is Zach Moss. It's kind of like the Derrick Henry scenario. Moss kind of found one of the few landing spots that could actually increase his value. So he turns that strong start last year with the Colts, where he was filling in for Jonathan Taylor. he turns that into an actual starting gig. And that wasn't guaranteed heading into free agency. It was rumored that he was potentially going to end up with a starting role somewhere, but there was only a few teams looking for a starting running back, and he found one of them. So now Moss sets up to be that Joe Mixon replacement in what's a top-notch Bengals offense. They're going to return to power now that Joe Burrow is healthy this year. And at worst, Moss is going to be the early down guy in this offense, the short yardage back, but he still could be a three-down back. And then you'd have Chase Brown sprinkled in a little bit. That was kind of how Brown was used last year, right? He's not a volume back. Brown is not a guy that's coming for that starting role. He's an explosive part-time player out there. He only had three games where he saw double-digit touches, and he didn't top 12 touches in any contest. So Moss is positioned very nicely to return low-end RB2 or high-end RB3 fantasy stats in 2024. And for the faller in Cincy, I could mention Brown here. I don't think we need to go over him again. So I'm going to say Andre Yoshivash. And he was a dart throw to begin the offseason. Maybe T. Higgins could have gotten traded, or maybe Yoshivash would slide in as the Tyler Boyd replacement. But now Higgins looks like he's staying for one more year. And the Bengals, they go out and they draft Jermaine Burton in the third round. And they also sign a pass-catching tight end in Mike Gesicki, who's getting some good reviews from beat writers and some of his new teammates. So that Yoshivash dream, it's on hold for now. Another AFC North team, the Browns. And the riser here is Jerome Ford, and to a lesser extent, Deonta Foreman, because the reports about Nick Chubb right now and his recovery from that knee injury, not really instilling confidence right now that he's going to be ready for week one. He had to undergo that initial surgery, and that was to repair the MCL and the meniscus. And then after he was healed enough from that, he underwent a second surgery to repair the ACL. And he's on the older side for a running back. He's turning 29 in December. I expect that we're going to see him start the year on the PUP list. And I think that's why they brought Foreman in, just as an insurance policy for him. And then we'll see if Chubb can get back to full strength and if he can be his dominating self maybe later in the season. But in the meantime, Ford showed that he can handle that lead back job last year. So he's going to have a chance to do that again. And if and when Chubb does return, Ford could still have value as a flex. And Foreman, he makes for a nice Chubb backup option because he can be that power back on early downs. He could complement Ford very well. And it's not impossible that Foreman could take the lead role if he needs to while Chubb's out, because we've seen Foreman do it in the past. He's had these situations where the path kind of opens up for him. It happened in Tennessee when Derrick Henry got hurt one year. It happened in Carolina when CMC got traded. So Foreman is a sneaky stash for 2024. And the faller in Cleveland, Chubb, we already went over. We'll have to monitor that recovery closely, but I would temper the expectations, at least early in the season, for him. So I'll go with Elijah Moore on this one. And he's somebody who I've been drawn to him because of the talent before, but the Browns, they go out, they get Jerry Jeudy, they sign Jeudy to a new contract. They already had Amari Cooper and David Njoku. Those guys are already favorites in the passing game in Cleveland. So I don't see Moore getting enough targets to be fantasy relevant this year, unless some serious injuries strike that receiver room or something. So Moore is a faller as well. Over to the Broncos next. Now, I'm not super excited about this offense for fantasy this year, but I will give Bo Nix the nod here because I didn't view him as a year one starter, but in Denver with the draft capital he got, 12th overall, he's definitely starting in 2024. They're not going into battle with Zach Wilson or Jarrett Stidham over him. So Nix is a riser, but still not somebody that I want to target in fantasy outside of two quarterback or super flex leagues. And then the faller in Denver, in my eyes, it's Javonte Williams. And all they added was Audric Estime in the fifth round in the draft, so not a huge investment. But this is more about what we saw last year and how Sean Payton talks about this backfield. It's an open competition, so nothing's guaranteed. And Williams, he didn't look like the same player coming back from the injury last year. Maybe he'll be closer to himself another year removed from the injury. But even if he is, Payton seemed pretty content rolling with a committee approach, right? They still have Samaje Perine. They have Jaleel McLaughlin. They have a guy like Estime there who could take some early down work. They got an intriguing UDFA in Blake Watson, who I've talked about on past episodes. So really, if they go with the committee approach, that's going to limit Javonte's ceiling in fantasy. And with some other running backs out there in better situations, I've moved him down and I've moved those guys above him in the ranks. So Javonte, more of an RB3 right now. Next up, one of the most hyped teams entering the season, and that's the Texans. And it's for good reason, right? CJ Stroud, he looks like a stud already. He's a top five quarterback. We could call him a riser for Houston because they've only added more pieces around him, but that kind of seems too easy. So I'll say Joe Mixon instead, because in Cincy, Mixon, he played without Joe Burrow for most of last year. His numbers weren't overly impressive. I'm sure that had to do with it a little bit, right? Not having his quarterback out there. But he's 27. He's turning 28 this year. The arrows seem to be pointing down for him in his career. But the Bengals, they move on from him. And now he's in Houston, where this offense could really prop him back up. Devin Singletary last year was a solid fantasy RB2 down the stretch once he got that starting gig. And I have a lot of confidence in offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick there. He stuck around for at least another year. Damian Pierce, the backup running back, he looked out of place in this system, so I don't really consider him a threat to Mixon. I think Mixon's going to get plenty of volume, and if he can stay healthy, high-end RB2 numbers or even low-end RB1 numbers are well within his reach. Defenses are going to be worried about Stroud. They're going to be worried about all the options they have there in the pass-catching core now. So Mixon's going to be able to thrive. He's a riser for me. And the fallers, I have two for this team. Dalton Schultz is one, because when everybody was healthy last year, Schultz wasn't really an impact fantasy tight end. He put up his bigger games when other guys were hurt. And now they've added Stephon Diggs to the mix, of course. So Schultz is going to have a very hard time putting up top 12 fantasy stats. So he's a faller. I would not waste my time drafting him. And I also think Diggs is a faller. He's gone from Buffalo, where he was the guy, and at least until midway through last season, you considered him a pretty strong fantasy asset. Then he caused another team to sour on him and trade him away, just like what happened with the Vikings. And he's ended up in a much more crowded receiving core. He's got Nico Collins and Tank Dell to contend with. So I'm not really projecting that he's going to get the monster target share that he was once getting in Buffalo. He's also turning 31 during the season, so he's older. He faded down the stretch the last 2 years. Now he's got more competition. I have him down in the low-end wide receiver 2 range, which is far from the top 12, which is where he used to be. Sticking in the AFC South for the next couple here, the Colts. And I mean, everything we are hearing about Anthony Richardson, it just sounds fantastic. He's healthy. They've given him more weapons. They got A.D. Mitchell in the second round. Jonathan Taylor's ready to roll at the start of the season, unlike last year when he started the year out. And Richardson, he's going into his second season. He's even more comfortable in the offense. The coaching staff's raving about him, which all points to Richardson being an outstanding fantasy quarterback in 2024. We've talked about him having that top 5 production in the very small sample size last year when he was healthy. He did that as a rookie. I think he could be the league-winning quarterback this year, and I'm just worried where his ADP is going to end up, because he is not going to be cheap, but he is certainly a riser. And then the faller in Indy for me, it's Josh Downs. I know some people like him, but for me, this goes back to the A.D. Mitchell pick. Downs, he flashed a bit last year, but he's going to be a slot guy in an offense that has Michael Pittman, that has Jonathan Taylor. In my mind, Mitchell is a future star. I think he's a better talent than Downs. So it's going to be hard for Downs to get the consistent target share to make him a weekly fantasy starter out there. Downs, lower in my rankings than I think most people probably have him, and he's got that dreaded faller label on him after this offseason and the way things have gone. One more AFC South team for now. The Jaguars and the riser in Jacksonville. There's actually two, Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram. And this one's kind of tricky because it's based on Calvin Ridley leaving and he's getting replaced by Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas Jr. And I really like BTJ as a long-term star in Jacksonville, but he's raw. He's going to need to develop. And in year one, his biggest impact is going to be as a big, speedy downfield threat. And Gabe Davis, he's going to help on the other side. They're going to open things up for this offense. And that's going to leave Kirk and Ingram to just eat up targets in the middle of the field. And that is where Trevor Lawrence loves to throw it. So Kirk and Ingram, really nice values if my projections for this offense are right. And these guys might get overlooked a little bit because people see the Jags using a first round pick on a receiver. They see them signing Gabe Davis, and they're kind of drawn away from the fact that Kirk and Ingram are really the stalwarts there in that offense. Now, the faller for the Jags is Gabe Davis, and he goes from Buffalo, where he was at least a top 2 or top 3 target in the offense, to Jacksonville, where he's got a ton of competition, and that's going to make him even more of a veteran best ball pick than he was in Buffalo. So I don't have many shares of Davis this year, and I don't think I'm going to be looking to draft him moving forward. We're off to Kansas City next, and the riser here, Isaiah Pacheco. The Chiefs, all they really did, they brought back Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They signed a couple UDFAs in that backfield, but they didn't really bring in real competition for Pacheco. And at the moment, They haven't re-signed Jerick McKinnon and probably don't plan to. I mean, he's 32 years old. They gave his number to Xavier Worthy after they drafted him in the first round. So Pacheco has a real opportunity here if he can stay healthy, which hasn't always been easy for him the way he runs. But if he can stay out there, he could be an RB1 for fantasy this season with the kind of volume that I think he could get. And then the faller for the Chiefs, it has to go to Rashee Rice. And I'm not going to get into the legal stuff in depth here, but I always recommend go and follow our buddy Drew Davenport from Football Guys. We've had him on the show before. He does an outstanding job breaking down the legal situations. And for my view, it's just hard to imagine the league not doing anything now. You have a player who was already in trouble, apparently makes another misstep off the field. So people normally tend to overreact to these kind of headlines, and often cases get pushed back and the suspension and the punishment doesn't come till later. But Rice is really putting himself in a tough spot where the league could almost put him on the commissioner's exempt list. And we had one national reporter, I think it was Tom Pelissero, who suggested that the Chiefs were bracing for Rice to be gone for half of the season. So he's an obvious faller for fantasy, and that's before we even factor in, I mean, Worthy getting drafted in round one and the team signing Marquise Brown at free agency and some more target competition that he's going to have to deal with this year. We'll keep moving. Let's go to the Raiders and a couple risers. I just should highlight these guys quickly. The quarterbacks, they're certainly winners this offseason. I mean, Vegas wanted a QB in the draft. That was clear. They needed a quarterback. And by the time they picked at 13, the top six QBs were gone. So they were the ones left without a chair. And that means it's going to be a camp battle between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Not ideal. It gives both players a chance to start. You know, I would place my chip on Minshew. They paid him pretty decent money in free agency. He's been a decent backup and a pretty good part-time starter out there. Not necessarily the guy you want leading your franchise, but this is bottom-of-the-barrel super flex options we're talking about. You know, no matter who wins the job, you're not overly excited about them. Unless, of course, Tom Brady comes back and takes the role, which, I mean, people love to bring that up as a possibility. Sure seems like it's almost impossible. Not impossible, but very close to it. I think if Brady were to come back, my guess is it would be for a team like the 49ers or the Chiefs. You know, if they lose their quarterback to a season-ending injury, let's say in like December, and then they could look to ask Brady, you know, come save the day for us. It's the longest of long shots, but regardless, we'll keep moving here. Minshew, O'Connell, their values have to get a boost just based on the fact that the Raiders couldn't find another quarterback to come in there. So one of those guys is going to start in week one. But the real offseason riser for the Raiders, it's Zamir White, because the only competition they brought in for him is Alexander Mattison, who we know fell out of favor in Minnesota, and Dylan Lobby, a sixth round pick. So White is going to begin the year where he left off as that volume hog in the backfield. And he could be a top 24, even a top 20 fantasy running back in that role. And then the faller for Vegas, we don't have to spend much time on this one. It's Michael Mayer. And yes, he could still get snaps at tight end. Brock Bowers could go out there and play more of a slot role. But when your team drafts a playmaking tight end 13th overall, not a great sign for your fantasy outlook. So Mayer, the breakout, it's not happening this year. Okay, we've reached the Chargers, and the risers for LA are the backs. And I kind of hinted at this one earlier. So Gus Edwards, Kamani Vidal, those are the guys that you're going to look to. They also signed J.K. Dobbins, but Dobbins coming off another serious injury. This time it's an Achilles, and backs a year removed from an Achilles, they don't tend to perform very well. I would keep my expectations extremely low for Dobbins, like he might not even make the team kind of low. Now, Edwards, he's healthy. He's also got the history with Greg Roman. He could be that value guy, the stopgap veteran back for the Chargers. I doubt that they're going to rely on him alone, though. And that's one of the reasons why Vidal is so enticing, even though he's a sixth round pick. And it's not hard to envision the rookie carving out a role pretty quickly, maybe even a big one, with Edwards being that early down grinder and the power option alongside him. Even Isaiah Spiller, I mean, has a sliver of hope in this backfield, but his chances of being the guy are very slim at this point. But somebody's got to get touches in this backfield. So Edwards and Vidal, they're risers. And the faller is probably shocking to most people, but it's Justin Herbert. You have the arrival of Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, the departure of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler and Gerald Everett. Yes, Ladd McConkey's interesting at receiver, but he's not going to fill that massive void that all those guys are leaving. And the expectation under Harbaugh and Roman is that the team is going to run a lot more. So weaker weapons, less volume, that makes Herbert more of a high-end QB2, not a QB1 for fantasy in 2024. For the Dolphins, it's kind of hard to pinpoint a riser here. I'll go with Tua Tagovailoa. the improvement to the tight end spot, they go get Jonnu Smith. They improve the third receiver spot with Odell Beckham Jr. That's on top of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and a really deep backfield. So Tua's in a good spot to be the best quarterback that he could possibly be, which at best is probably a low-end QB1, more likely a high-end QB2 for fantasy, but it's still been a positive offseason for him. The faller in Miami, I'm going to go with Raheem Mostert, and we can't drop him too far because he did have a great season last year, but if Devon Achane stays healthy this year, now they added Jalen Wright, who's another fast option in this backfield, a guy who could really take over that Mostert role. And Mostert's 32 years old. He's had pretty good injury luck lately. I mean, you know, one injury this season and Mostert could probably get Wally pipped here. So that's why he's a faller, but he still has value, especially where I've seen him going in drafts in like the eighth round or so. I would definitely take a shot on him there. And then I would just grab Wright as well in the later rounds. I think that's a nice pairing to have this season. For the Patriots, some small risers and fallers, but on the riser side, it's the rookie wideouts, Jalen Polk, Javon Baker. They end up on a wide open depth chart where we should see both of them start in 2024. And I think Polk has the better chance to return fantasy value right away, but Baker's the cheaper option in drafts, so you might want to look to him. And this isn't an offense that I'm really investing that much in, but if you're looking for a cheap number one wideout, the Patriots is the offense to go to. Somebody's going to emerge in New England, and I think the rookies are the best option to do so. And then the faller, we could take the low-hanging fruit and say one of the veteran receivers, but the truth is, I'm going to say Ramondre Stevenson because the team brought in Antonio Gibson. Gibson could take on some of the pass-catching work. That could limit Ramondre's ceiling, and you know we don't know what Drake May is going to be yet, so this offense, it could struggle with so many young players out there this season, so Stevenson more of a low-end RB2 this year. Just a couple more teams left, so for the Jets, Aaron Rodgers is the riser. He is. And the team added Mike Williams and Malachi Corley. They fill out the receiving core behind Garrett Wilson. Plus, Rodgers is getting healthier after missing last season, and he's clearly calling the shots in that offense. I mean, based on some of the reports we've heard recently, Nathaniel Hackett, the stories that have come out. So Rodgers, he's got a chance to push himself up into the top 15 quarterbacks if he can stay healthy this year. And then the faller in New York, it's Alan Lazard. I mean, this one was easy to predict. Rodgers helped him get that contract likely, and it was immediately a mistake for the Jets. Now you have Lazard falling down the depth chart to fourth or fifth. He might even get moved or cut, so hard times for Lazard there. How about the Steelers? So Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, they're going to battle for the starting job this summer. Sure seems like Wilson is in the lead going into that competition, so we could see him ultimately emerge as a riser. But I'll say Pat Freiermuth for me is the real riser in Pittsburgh because Deontay Johnson's gone. Roman Wilson is an unproven rookie and one that I wasn't particularly high on coming out, though he's going to have a good shot to be the number two wideout in this offense right away. But Freiermuth, he's just one season removed from a 700-yard campaign. He's two seasons removed from a 7-touchdown campaign. And with Johnson gone, there's a void that needs to be filled. Freiermuth could emerge as the de facto number two pass catcher behind George Pickens, and it wouldn't take much for him to get into the low-end tight end one conversation. So keep him in mind as a late-round tight end option. And then the faller for the Steelers, it's got to be Justin Fields, right? I mean, it's possible he could win this job or Russ could get hurt and all of a sudden we see him out there doing his thing. But right now, it seems like Fields is going to sit for a year or at least part of the year. And that's a massive hit for a guy that was kind of a promising starter in Chicago at one point, right? So long term, Fields is going to get another chance. Short term, his value has definitely fallen for fantasy. And then we'll finish off with the Titans. The riser here, it's got to be their quarterback, Will Levis. And I'm not particularly high on Levis, but what a difference a year makes. You know, he goes from a run-heavy attack with DeAndre Hopkins and Chig Okonkwo as kind of his best downfield options to now having Brian Callahan as his head coach, a guy who helped Jake Browning produce in Cincy when Joe Burrow was hurt last year. That was kind of an impressive feat for Callahan. And then the Titans have a ton of upgrades on the offense, right? The receiving core now features Hopkins and Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd and Treylon Burks. They try to improve the offensive line a little bit. They still have Okonkwo at tight end. And now they have not one but two explosive pass-catching backs in Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. So if Levis is going to do it, this is the time for him to do it. And then the faller in Tennessee, it's got to be Burks. He goes from a first round pick to now the number four wideout. I mean, they could say whatever they want, but barring an injury, doesn't really seem like Burks has a path to snaps and targets this season, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets moved or even if he just gets cut this summer. So tough times for Burks. A lot of promise coming out. He dealt with injuries, you know, maybe some conditioning problems. Never really got used in a way that I think he needed to be to succeed. And that was something we talked about when he was coming out of college. Maybe he'll get his chance elsewhere at some point, but the odds of that are now fading. And that is all for today's show. So you know by now, you can find all my content for free over at The Score, including my latest 2024 redraft rankings. And like I said earlier, I'll be back with the NFC risers and fallers on Wednesday, and then some NFL schedule reaction on Friday likely. But until then, big thanks for following me on Twitter at Justin Boone. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby, said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight. I said leave on time.